May it please the court, I am Scott Williams. I represent the City of St. Peter's in this matter. Your Honor, this is a different case procedurally, I think, from some of the other cases in terms of how the red light cameras work. In our case, as you know from the briefs, the face of the operator is photographed, not only in still photographs, but in video in our case. And violation for an operator violation would therefore run against the actual operator of the vehicle when identified. And number two, the defendant exercised her right to request a trial by jury and declare her innocence and obtained a full trial, was about a day and a half actually trying this case, in the Circuit Court of St. Charles County. Unless the court takes me a different direction, my intent would be to argue that the statutes of the state, Chapter 43, relating to the authority of the Director of Public Safety, in fact, his responsibility to put together a charge manual, and the authority of the Department of Revenue under Chapter 302, and the red light camera ordinance of the City of St. Peter's should, if at all possible, be construed harmoniously. And I believe they can be in order to give effect to all three of those. I would layer on top of that the fact that 302, the language in 302 is directory rather than mandatory with regard to the imposition of points and the suspension of licenses. And number three, if necessary, I would argue that the red light camera provisions in Chapter 43 are more specific than the provisions of 302, such that Chapter 43 and the manual required by 43 would therefore trump 302.
Excuse me, before we go into that, you'd mentioned that your statute provides for taking a picture of the operator.
Yes, Your Honor.
Once you get the picture of the operator, what does the municipality do with that?
Your Honor, there is there's actually video and photographs that are forwarded with information concerning the registration of the vehicle. The operator then has an opportunity of comparing the registration information to the photograph of the person operating to see whether or not it's a male or a female. They also have the opportunity to exercise any lawful means under the ordinance to identify the operator of the vehicle,
Is there a record as far as what the municipality does with that picture? Is there facial recognition software or anything that's used to determine the identity of that person?
As a practical matter, what they've done is go to the Department of Revenue website, take a look at the driver's license photograph, and compare that to the person that's seen in the photograph. They have the authority to do more than that. They can use any lawful means. They can do a knock and talk if they want to at the residence of the person to whom it's registered or at the leasing agency, for instance.
And if the vehicle's titled XYZ Corporation, how do they find out who the operator of that car is?
Your Honor, as a practical matter, that's difficult, but they can exercise any lawful means as they could under any circumstances to identify the violator, which means that if it's registered to a leasing company or a corporation, they can go to that entity, they can knock and talk, they can say who was operating this vehicle on this day, and they can go from there. They have the authority to do that.
Do you also take a picture of the license?
Pardon me?
Do you also take a picture of the license or only the operator?
They take a picture, actually there's a camera from two directions, Your Honor. From the front and the back, they get both, and they're required to get both the tag on the vehicle that shows the state and the numbers on the tag, and they have a picture of the light going from green to red with the stop bar and the vehicle from the rear as well, and then a photograph and video from the front showing the face, and they have to have all of those elements in order to proceed with the charge. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. And I think the law is uncontested on this, that statutes are to be construed, if at all possible, to get a full effect to both of them. And I think that 302, 302, and 43, 505, and 512, the responsibilities of the Director of Revenue and the responsibilities of the Director of...
Counsel, I note your argument that the charge code basically supersedes anything else, and since it says it's not, as I read your brief, that if it says there's no points, then there's no points. But the statute says there'll be 2 points for all other moving municipal violations. Regulations, interpretation, charge codes, none of that can overrule what the statute says. The legislature gets to decide that matter.
Your Honor, my belief is that the charge code manual has the force and effect of the legislature, of the statute, because it's required by the statute.
But the statute is there and says we shall assess 2 points for all moving violations, municipal ordinance moving violations. The legislature has, you can't, we have many cases saying regulations, which are what agencies do. They don't pass statutes.
Right.
Issued under statutes have to conform. They're invalid if they're inconsistent with the statute. And I, you're saying, well, this is how they're interpreting it, but if it's not ambiguous, they can't interpret it. They have to apply it as it's written.
Your Honor, the number 302.302 does not address red light camera violations. I should mention that to start with.
It says all other moving ordinance, if it's a moving violation, all other municipal ordinances for moving violations shall be assessed 2 points. So it does.
Not specifically listed. Correct.
It's an other municipal ordinance that's for moving violation. Do you have to list out every ordinance of every county in order for the statute to cover it, or can the legislature do it in that way?
Your Honor, I think in asking that question, you've got to the heart of the way I understand this. Of course, it would be burdensome for the legislature, given the fact that municipalities are adopting new ordinances and new charges all the time, to list all of those in the statute. So it defers that responsibility to the Department of Public Safety to deal with that in the charge code manual.
So is there no meaning to other municipal ordinance moving violations of municipal ordinances shall have 2 points? That doesn't apply to anything unless the director decides it does?
I think that that's the statutory scheme. The director of the Department of Public Safety decides what is reportable and what is not reportable, as required by the charge code manual. And in fact, Chapter 43, 512 says that manual shall be used by all criminal justice agencies, which includes the City of St. Peter's, its police department, and the Director of Revenue, for reporting information required by these sections, which includes, of course, these charges. So the city was required not to report it under the charge manual and under 43.512. It was a violation that had not been listed. The legislature deferred to the Director of Revenue dealing with these new charges.
And where does it indicate that you, the director can decide which moving violations get points and which don't?
The Director of Public Safety has the charge, under the supervision of this court, of course, of preparing that charge code manual.
Are you saying the director can just decide on his or her own which ones get points, or does the legislature set that out in the statute?
He has the authority, the discretion to determine what's reportable and what's not reportable, and I suppose what he considers moving and what he doesn't consider moving. Now, layer on top of that the fact that 302.302, the purpose of that is to ultimately revoke or suspend driving privileges, and it appears that there was a determination made by the Director of Public Safety that this is not the class of violation that should result in a suspension for whatever reason. Again, the city was simply doing what it was required to do by 43.512. And on to that, the fact that 302.302 is directory and not mandatory, because it doesn't prescribe any penalty or any consequence of not complying or of not reporting. Layer onto that, that 43.512 is mandatory because there is a consequence prescribed if you don't follow 43.512. Specifically, we can lose our state funding for the Department of Police, for our municipal court system, and so forth, if we don't comply with the requirements of Chapter 43 and of that manual. I see these as being construed harmoniously to give, and it's our task, I think it's this court's task, to give effect to both issues.
Let me clarify. So you say you're not required to report it to the public safety if you don't want to?
Your Honor, the manual, we have to comply with the manual. The manual says that a red light camera violation, public safety, is not reported and carries no points. We complied with that, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And so those are essentially our arguments. They can be construed harmoniously. Under the statutory framework, the Department of Public Safety decides what's reportable, how it's reportable. Very clear in the statute that it does that. The Department of Revenue then receives the information that's reported consistent with what the Department of Public Safety says, acts on that to suspend license. When the point is reached.
What would be the effect if this court were to disagree with that argument and say that the statute requires that moving violations have 2 points and that you have to report it, and to the extent the charge code says that it's incorrect, just as a presumption, that you should have done the 2 points.
Yeah.
You should have reported it, but you did not. What would that mean for the validity of your statute,
Your Honor,
of your ordinance? I'm sorry.
Different, I think, from the case that was just argued. Our ordinance does include a provision. We believe it was an act consistent with Chapter 43 that this charge will not carry any points that no points will be assessed. Our backup argument, in the unusual position where we lose, our backup argument is that, of course, that provision can and should be severed from the ordinance. There is a severability clause in the ordinance saying that anything inconsistent with law or found to be inconsistent with law should be severed, and it should be otherwise enforced.
Because unlike the other two cases, your ordinance specifically says no points are to be charged, and the other two cases are silent.
That, I think that's correct, Your Honor. Ours does say no points are to be charged. And again, that's why, for purposes of my argument, I've gone straight to Chapter 43, because that's the authority for that. And again, I think the city was simply doing what it was charged with doing. And under the framework that I've suggested, with the Department of Revenue determining what's reportable in terms of new violations, excuse me, the Department of Public Safety, Department of Revenue then receiving those reports and dealing with them, you can give full effect both to Chapter 43, 302, and the ordinance of the city, which I believe is really what the courts are tasked to do to the extent they possibly can. I would also argue that Chapter 43 is more specific because it specifically deals in the manual with red light camera violations, public safety violations, whereas 302 doesn't even address running a, specifically address running
Excuse
a
me.
Stoplight.
If we could go back to the severability argument, if we went that direction, wouldn't that then be penalizing the citizen out there who got the ticket that said that there's no points on there? We say, yeah, it is, and then he ends up with points. Nobody gets hurt except for the guy out on the street.
Your Honor, retrospectively, it would be. Prospectively, I think not. The complainant, the defendant in this case, is in the strange position of arguing that our ordinance is invalid because we didn't assess her 2 points. Now when we're trying to accommodate her, if necessary, through severability, she's claiming that that's not fair. Okay. She relies on the rule of lenity, which has only been applied to statutes and not ordinances, and nowhere does it say that you don't apply severability.
Well, certainly, but your retrospective argument, if you notified her there would be no points, if the ordinance said there will be no points, then someone who violated it would have no notice points could be assessed. You're not saying you could retroactively change that and give them points. You're saying it would be prospective.
It would be, well, you're right.
So it would be inconsistent with the notice and the ordinance.
It would be a way of saving the ordinance. That's correct.
The argument was made, an argument was made in the previous case that this was a failure of the owner to supervise the operation of his or her vehicle versus, in this case, a failure to stop at a stop sign. What's your position on this?
In terms of?
Which argument is it? Is this a
failure to supervise? Ours is an operator violation.
Now, operator, not
yeah,
an owner.
Yeah, supervision. Purely an operator violation in the Roeder case, Your Honor. Hypothetically, we can enforce any of the city traffic codes through our cameras. And so if we see an expired tag, hypothetically, we could charge that. Although the vehicle's moving, it's considered a non-moving violation that would run against the vehicle owner in that particular case. But that's not this appeal. This appeal is a red light camera violation, passing the stop bar against a red light.
All right. Any further questions? You'll have 3 minutes on rebuttal, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Schock.
May it please the court. My name is Beavis Schock. I represent Bonnie Roeder in this matter. I'd like to begin with this issue of 43 versus 302. My opponent's argument is that 43 is more specific, and I just suggest to the court that it's not. That 302 specifically says points shall be assessed for a moving violation. 301.010 defines a moving violation as when the car is moving. I'm thinking back to taking the bar review course and the professor saying, now let's go over assault with a deadly weapon. If a guy picks up a lamp and whacks somebody over the head, was that assault with a deadly weapon? Was the lamp a deadly weapon? All these eager law students, soon to be lawyers, oh, I don't know, it's a tell me. And the professor said, of course it's a deadly weapon. He killed him with it. This is this simple. There is an attempt in this series of cases to take something that's simple and make it complicated. The simplicity of 302 is that points shall be assessed. And I think that should be closed. I mean, I talk in the briefing about the magistrate of the three branches of government. The executive branch does not have the authority to create offenses. As Judge Smith said, it only has the authority.
Now, what about the directory mandatory argument? Whether it's directory.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, sir.
Whether it's directory or mandatory.
Okay. I'd like to talk about the two cases that discuss that. They are the Cones case and the Kirsten case. In one, in the Cones case, it related to proving up prior offenses to make a defendant a persistent offender. And it said that the statute said the prosecutor has to provide this information from DOR. And they used it, not from DOR, from the records of the courts. And the court said, no, that's not true. This court said they can get it some other way. And so my opponent says that because it says shall provide this information about persistent and prior, that there's no penalty for not doing it in the Cones case, so they don't have to do it here. But I suggest to you that's a procedural matter, and this is a substantive matter. 302 is substantive. It's what happens in regard to specific conduct, the conduct being speeding. The other case is the Kirsten case, where there was same setup in the sense that it's procedural. In Kirsten, the municipality was supposed to report this umpteenth DWI for this offender within 10 days. Didn't get there within 10 days. Court said that can't be used as a shield here. The clerk was late, fair and square, was supposed to have reported it earlier. That doesn't get the defendant out of this DWI being part of the record and affecting the driver's license. Again, that's a procedural issue, and the court gave the people in charge of moving the papers around a little bit of discretion. Fine. This 302 is substantive. It is what shall happen when there is a offense where the car is moving. So the distinction of shall versus mandatory should be really looked at as procedural versus substantive, in my view.
Well, how does the fact that they said points would not be assessed, they don't assess the points, that's DOR's job, and the fact that they said they wouldn't report it, how does that affect the validity of the underlying ordinance? That's the connection that escapes me.
I believe it makes it invalid. And the reason I say that is because of the fact that 302, the speeding statute makes speeding a crime in this state. It is a statewide statute going over a speed limit. Now, do municipalities have the right to set their speed limits within their limits, within their boundaries? Absolutely. But that doesn't affect that the underlying offense going too fast, regardless of what the number is and how many over, it's over.
So there could never be a municipal speeding violation. All speeding violations would have to be prosecuted in state court.
That is not what I intend to say, Your Honor.
But wouldn't that be the effect of your argument?
No, because that's not what the statutes say. The statutes said, let me try to clarify this, this is critical. The statute defines this conduct, going too fast.
As a state offense?
Yes, it's a statewide offense to speed. But the statutes further give the municipalities the authority to set the limits within their boundaries.
But any violation of that limit would be a violation of the state statute, which would, I think your argument is, would require filing a charge in the state courts and proceeding to the punishment authorized under the state statute.
That is not my argument. My argument is that the municipalities have the authority under the statute to bring charges for speeding within their limits. They do it all the time. But the conduct, the overall conduct, is defined in the statute as criminal conduct. That takes us to criminal, quasi-criminal, civil. But I want to emphasize that the statutes give the municipalities the authority to set their limits.
But they also specifically say if it's a if you charge them as a violation of state law, it's 3 points. Charge it as a violation of the municipal ordinance, it's 2 points. They clearly recognize you can have municipal ordinance speeding violations, which are for moving violations, which are separate and apart from the state, and actually provide for a different assessment of points depending on if it was an ordinance versus a statute. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
And at some point, we're going to come back to running a red light, which is what this case is about, right? The speeding is all interesting, but that's not this case.
And what I have said applies to red lights in the same way. I mean, I think there's no significant distinction between speeding and red lights.
For what purpose?
For the purpose of the analysis of this, because there's a statute that makes running a red light a violation of state law as well.
But you're also permitted to have municipal ordinances addressing that?
Absolutely, and because the statute which gives this authority to the municipalities essentially says you can make up the rules of the road as they make sense for your location.
So how is there a conflict? Is my question.
The point I'm trying to make and I'm sorry if I don't understand your question, but the point I'm trying to make about conflict or no conflict is simply that if there is a state statute that makes certain conduct a crime, that there is an implication there that when the same conduct is pursued by a municipality, it has the elements of punishment, the elements of trying to change behavior through incentives.
And perhaps some of the questions have been that ordinarily, however, historically, where you're alleged to have violated an ordinance, it's not a misdemeanor under state law. It's an infraction of the ordinance and it's treated differently. You're saying we should treat it as a crime, but it has not been treated as a crime. Even though it has to be found guilty and you plead and so forth, it's been treated as non-criminal.
And
I don't think you're asking us to treat all parking tickets and red lights as misdemeanors, and people have criminal histories at that point.
That is correct.
But that is the effect of your argument, I think.
Well, it is. Here's what I'm trying to say about this issue. We have to be careful to put the cart before the horse. What we call it is really should be a function of what's going on. I mean, we got to be careful to put a label on something and then define what the rules are going to be because of the label. We ought to look at the situation as what are the rules, and then we'll figure out a label to suit it. I found the cases as to the treatment of municipal violations to be somewhat all over the place. It's fuzzy. I mean, I just believe that's why I wrote in the brief in the Tupper case so elaborately on the different rights that one has in municipal court.
Let me run it back. My question was, if DOR doesn't do their job and assess these points, why does that make the city's ordinance invalid?
Because the conduct of a moving violation under the statute has to get the points.
Right, but that's not their job.
Well, their job as a municipality is to follow state law. They can't do anything. I mean, the line that Judge Robertson used was, when he was here, was the municipalities are the children of the state.
Right. So they may have to report it, but why does the fact they didn't, or even that they said they won't, invalidate the ordinance, making this red light running camera crime or infraction?
Well, because the ordinance says that it has to be reported. I mean, it's number
But if they don't, what's the consequence? You're saying the consequence is to hold the ordinance void, and the question is, why is that the consequence? A failure to follow state law and reporting the violation, if we find that is a violation.
Well, it's retrospectively, as to her, if it has to be reported and the ordinance says that it shall not be reported, right, which is what the situation is, then they've done the wrong thing.
But does that just affect her conviction, or does it invalidate the ordinance overall, which seems to be what you're saying, or does it just strike out, they say we just strike out that part that says it won't be reported?
So I think there are two questions there, as I'm interpreting it
correctly.
Probably
three or four.
So the first one is that this case is a charge against one person right there. It's a charge against her. So I'm like a lawyer up here in a death penalty case. Hey, I'm rooting for my client today. I'm not as worried about the, and I know this court
I
has
I think
to
it was be, just a $100 fine, so I think she's
well,
okay.
We're going to now, let me get into whether $100 is a lot of money, which was also brief.
Sorry, don't want to distract you. Go ahead.
But this case isn't an injunction case. This is a case against, which is a charge against one woman. And we assert that with their failure to follow the rules of the state of Missouri for this conduct means that the correct solution was the dismissal of her charge, and that's
did,
all I'm...
Did she rely on the provision in the ordinance that there would be no points assessed in her conduct in handling the case?
Your Honor, she got up in the morning and she went to work, and as she was approaching the light, she went through as it turned red.
No,
I think
my
there
question
was no
is,
mental...
She didn't plead guilty.
Oh, no, we had a jury trial.
Exactly. So she never... She didn't rely on the fact that she thought there would be no points in how she proceeded in this case.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So there was no, if in fact that provision of the ordinance is invalid, if there wasn't any application to her that she acted accordingly, believing it was a valid provision.
I would agree, but can I add a follow-up? The follow-up is that in our society, we have this presumption that people know the law and they conform their conduct to the law. I mean, look at the area of police misconduct where these policemen are presumed to understand the Court of Appeals opinion related to Arkansas that came out yesterday for they're going to conform their conduct today in Minnesota. I mean, it's a fiction. It's just not true.
So you're saying that the consequences... When she ran the red light, she had knowledge of the ordinance that said no points are assessed.
Well, we assume she did, sure. And I mean I'm trying to be straightforward with you. I'm not going to make
and
up
she didn't
story.
Get points assessed.
I'm sorry, sir.
She didn't get points assessed, right?
That's correct.
So, and no one's saying she should have, and yet you want to say she wasn't guilty of the conduct because the punishment they could have imposed and didn't, and she didn't want, wasn't imposed.
And I think that's Mr. Williams' argument. Here's why I think that I defeat that argument. A defendant in a criminal case has a right to raise every single defense that's available. If the ordinance has any form of invalidity, that criminal defendant gets the benefit of it.
But it's a facial challenge, right? Because it wasn't applied to her detriment in her case.
I feel like I have to write a law review article on the difference between facial challenges and as applied challenges. My answer is I think the distinction gets very gray in the middle, but in this case, all I am here to do is assert that because the way this ordinance is structured and enforced in this municipality against that woman was unlawful under Missouri law, this court should dismiss that charge. So it is, in that sense, an applied challenge. But I'm not sure the application of the phrases applied and facial really apply in a criminal context. That's usually in an injunctive relief context.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Shaker.
Just a few points, Your Honors. First of all, we did try this for a day and a half, and there's simply no record one way or the other as to whether the 2 points provision had anything to do with her challenge of the charge. She did not testify. in that case, exercising a right to so do. With regard to the directory versus mandatory, the city was simply doing what the charge code manual told it to do, consistent with 43.512. If this court later, or any other court later, determines that the interpretation of the director of the Department of Public Safety was improvident or incorrect, that should not annul the reliance, the previous reliance of the city of St. Peter's on that direction that was given by an entity of the state and that shall be followed by the city. In fact, the Director of Revenue, so far as I know, has not challenged, in this case or in any other case, that interpretation by the Department of Public Safety, as it would have the right to do if it chose to do so. Then finally, with respect to the Kersting and directory versus mandatory case, it's interesting that Kersting was in Chapter 302. That's what was under discussion. 302.225 versus 302 versus 302, 302.302. It had to do with the reporting requirement, just like our case, and this court ruled that it was directory and not mandatory because it did not carry any penalty. Again, set that against Chapter 43, which says the city can lose its state and federal funding if it doesn't comply with this manual. And we would ask that the judgment of the Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals be reversed, and that the validity of the ordinance be upheld.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Williams. Matter will be taken under submission.